This is another interview in our series, in our continuing series of interviews for the sesquicentennial year. Today, my guests are Barbara Ringer Hamill, class of 1932, and is currently on the Board of Overseers, and Dorothy DeQuinn Warner from the class of 36, and she is currently a member of the Board of Directors. This interview is taking place on Friday, March 10th at KCLC Studio, and I'm Joni Dodson. March 11th?
Uh-huh.
Friday, March 11th. The KCLC Studios. I'd like to welcome you both here. We're going to do this interview in basically two parts today. We're going to talk about, first of all, your life at Lindenwood and what you thought of Lindenwood as students, and then we're going to go ahead and see what you think of it from an adult viewpoint and from your adult involvement in Lindenwood. So I'd like to ask both of you, or each of you individually, how did you come to be a student at Lindenwood? Barbara?
Well, as I recall, I lived in Paul's Valley, Oklahoma, and one of our neighbors had come to Lindenwood, and my father, who made all decisions in the family, said, "That's where you shall go because it's a girls' school, and, well, literally, you'll be safe there, you know." So that's why I came to Lindenwood, and at the end of 2 years, I wanted to go back to Oklahoma University, but no, I had a younger sister, and I must accompany her to Lindenwood, and we both were graduating from here.
Hey, Dorothy?
I lived in Kansas City, and Kansas City had a very active alumni club, and I also had a friend who was considering Lindenwood very seriously. So she influenced me a great deal about coming. Oddly enough, I came and she didn't, and I came for only 1 year. I'm not a graduate from Lindenwood.
Why then, if you've only been here for 1 year, what's your interest now?
I've been asked that before, and I have a ready answer. I graduated from a very large school, and I felt that they had no interest in me after I graduated, and what little I could do for a school would not be felt there, mm-hmm. and might be felt here. And I love Lindenwood.
I can understand that. Barbara, how did you get involved with the alumni association?
I came back for a reunion, and I believe it was 1959, maybe it was 60, I'm not real sure about that, and enjoyed the weekend. I had not seen some of the women that came back and since I was here in school, and after I returned home, the alumni secretary wrote me a note and asked me would I serve on the alumni council, and I believe we were in our second year at that time, mm-hmm. and I accepted, and I've been with it ever since, literally.
Were you two here at the same time? Like, you came in 32 and she came in 36. Did you just get out before she came in? No. You came in 32.
Yes.
You graduated in 32.
I graduated in 32. I came in 29.
Then, okay. Yes, I think I was a freshman when you
uh-huh.
were a senior.
Uh-huh.
Okay, I'm getting my years mixed up bad. What was it like? What kind of courses did you take when you were at Lindenwood, Barbara?
Well, as an adult now, and coming back to Lindenwood, I will venture to say that I could not come back to school now and matriculate because it's very difficult as compared with when I was a student here, although it was the maximum of all education at the time, mm-hmm. and the time in which we lived. Now it's much more difficult, more varied in subject matter and experiences. The students get more involved in today's living than they did at that time. We came to school because we had to go to school, literally. And I feel that it's school, universities and colleges now have more to offer the young people.
Mm-hmm.
But then we are living in a different world also.
Right. Can you remember, like, what course? I know this was before your time, but they had regular, when Lindenwood was still a seminary, they had regular programs that were just set up, and that was exactly what the girls followed. Did you have any sort of regime like that, or was it just you got to choose your classes? Or?
Well, we had some electives, but I was in the School of Home Economics, and I took the courses that were prescribed for that course.
What about, Dorothy, your 1 year here, was that basically the way that...
Yes, as Barbara said, very few electives. My major was French, and strictly a liberal arts course. And we just followed the requirements, required yes. courses that we had to take.
I believe there were electives maybe in the junior and senior year.
Yes, but in my freshman year here, there was very little leeway.
Both of you all lived on campus, I assume, when you were
yes.
here.
Haven't you?
Nichols.
No one lived anyplace else.
Nichols Hall was the freshman dorm.
Yes.
Then I moved on to Ayers later for 2 years.
Yes, junior
and senior
to Sibley.
Year. What was dorm life like back then? That sounds terrible, I don't mean.
Well, let's say it was what you made of it. There were lots of fun things, and there were many, many rules. We had a house mother, and she was kept track of all of us. And, of course, in those days, you were not supposed to smoke, and that was quite a interesting way that the girls who did smoke got around it.
How did they get around it?
Well, there is Mrs. Barton will tell you how they got around it. She will give you an interview later. And in many times they'd go out on the fire escape and sit out there and smoke. And of course, the house mother knew you were smoking, but you know, if she didn't really catch you with a cigarette in your hand, she couldn't do too much.
And our rooms were inspected. For cleanliness,
yes, daily.
And neatness. Oh, yes.
Your bed had to be made.
Yes. Yes.
Yes.
I think I'd be kicked out.
Well, you really had to keep neat.
Oh.
Everything had to be very neat.
Definitely.
Picked up. And.
Were there roommates at that time?
Oh, yes. Uh-huh.
Everyone? Just.
Well, you could have a single. It was more costly to have a single room, but you enjoyed having a roommate. That was part of getting acquainted. I remember there were several girls from Paul's Valley that came in the succeeding years after I first came. And we didn't want a room together because we wanted to make new friends.
Right. What did you think of the cafeteria food?
It's very adequate, and I certainly enjoyed my breakfast this morning. But we were reminiscing at the table about the dining room back in the 30s, and we had white tablecloths and white napkins, and had a head of the table, either one of the house mothers or a senior girl or a member of the faculty. And the food was served by the head of the table and passed to the right.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a certain amount of good manners.
We stood for a
blessing.
Blessing.
Uh-huh.
First. Waited till Dr. and Mrs. Romer came in. They came to every meal.
Mm-hmm.
Entirely different from the way it is.
Yes. Of course, today's life is more casual.
Did you have then actual places, actual tables you were supposed to sit?
Yes, we were.
Every 6
tables.
Weeks they changed.
They
didn't
changed
they?
So that
yes.
you could get acquainted with
every 6
others.
Weeks, different group of girls and a different hostess.
Uh-huh.
That's really interesting.
Well, it was more formal. There,
we dressed.
Yes.
We dressed for dinner. I don't mean that we were very dressy for dinner,
mm-hmm.
but we really did pretty much change our clothes
yes.
from what we'd worn to class all day, or we freshened up a little bit, you know, to come to dinner. We were supposed to make some kind of concession toward dinner, the dinner
True.
Hour.
That was just for dinner. That wasn't for, say, lunch or breakfast.
No, just for dinner.
Someone told me, I'm sorry, did you want to say something?
I was going to say, and on Sunday we wore heels.
Oh, Sunday.
Remember?
That's right, that's right.
Yes,
yeah.
You know, you really dressed
and
up.
And we went to Vespers on
yes,
Sunday about
evening.
5 o'clock, and
mm-hmm.
then we had a god-awful cheese and cold supper afterwards that was very unappetizing.
Last year, every Sunday night, we were served spaghetti and ham. Every Sunday night in a row, it was always spaghetti and ham.
Right?
We got real tired of
it. And if you had a date on Sunday night, you had to go to Vespers with your date.
Yes.
Isn't that right?
Yes.
Someone told me that during the time that Dr. Romer was here, when the girls went into the cafeteria for dinner, they had to wear hose, that they could wear socks during the day or to lunch or something, but they had to be in nylons. Do you remember
well, that's
that?
Probably
I'm
true,
sure.
but see, girls did not wear pants or jeans.
No, there were no pants.
And we wore dresses, so therefore, hose were appropriate. And I maybe Saturday mornings they went without hose, but I don't really recall that.
What kind of things did you do socially? Like, You had parties in the dorm, I'm sure, but what kind of things did you do?
I think one of the most interesting things, when we would go into town in St. Charles, and we had to go as a body, a group of girls going.
With a chaperone.
With a chaperone, and we would walk down the street, you know, and then the boys would drive by, you know, wave and whistle. And always someday developed out of that incident. Mm-hmm. But it had to be sort of on the side.
We weren't allowed in a hotel in St. Charles. Unless we were with our parents. If we went to a movie, for instance, we went to the movie with a chaperone and came right back to school. Isn't that right?
And the boys were listed. There was a list of young men, eligible young men to date, and occasionally one would come up on the blacklist.
Mm-hmm.
And, oh, it was, well, that was the way we lived in those days.
Dances at the gym.
Yes.
Okay. We got all dressed up for the dances, as I recall. Lots of times, girls dance together.
That's still going on.
Is there a lack
is
of dance?
Really? Is the swimming pool still in Butler?
Mm-hmm.
All right, that is the only thing left that is the same as it was in the 30s.
The only thing?
Well, more or less. Of course, the buildings. But
yeah.
The whole environment of college life today is entirely changed.
Miss Reichert was here, wasn't she?
Yes,
swimming
Marie Reichert.
Wonderful.
I had a question for you. You said when you went to the shows that you had to have a chaperone. Is that with a date, if you went out on it?
Oh, this was just the girls going into shop.
Okay, what about when you went on a date, did you have to have a chaperone?
No, you had to sign out. And
back
be gone
in
until,
by a certain time.
Right, and I don't recall the hour, 11 o'clock.
11 during the weekend, was it 12
on
weekends?
I think so, on the weekend.
Or Saturday, anyway. Mm-hmm. Certainly Sunday night was early.
And if you went into St. Louis for the weekend, of course you had to have permission from home, a written permission.
Oh,
or
that's
telegram.
Right. I'd forgotten that.
Mm-hmm. Or a telegram, in case.
Were you allowed visitors, say a girlfriend from home wanted to come and visit you, or someone that was a day student here wanted to spend the night in the dorm? Were you allowed anything like that?
I don't recall. It didn't happen to me. Do you know,
I didn't have it happen, but I seem to remember there being some red tape involved with having a guest from out of town who would stay overnight. And I hesitate to say this, but I do believe we were not encouraged to have the day students. Do you remember anything
about that? I don't remember there was even a need to stay overnight. You know, the friendships were there, of course, during the daytime in classes. I don't even remember visiting in the St. Charles homes more than occasionally, because we were together all day. You went home and...
What was your course study for home economics, basically, over the 4 years?
Well, there was, of course, divided into foods and clothing, and there was lots of chemistry, and I didn't do too well in that. And aside from the freshman courses that were required, that was our freshman year, and really you didn't get into home economics until about the junior year. And I remember Ada Tucker was our clothing instructor, and Marie Mortensen was our foods instructor. And I talked about her just yesterday and have learned that she is a sister-in-law of Lula Clayton Beale.
Oh, really?
Who's our registrar here at Lindenwood.
I know Lula.
And that was an interesting bit of news, because I have known them all, but I didn't know they were related. And... Well, I have fond memories of the experiences there.
What about, can you remember very much about the French program?
Yes, I can, because I had Madame Worcester, which of course is a German name, but she was a French teacher. Perfectly marvelous woman. And she took a few of us into St. Louis to a whole kind of Alliance Française meeting, evening. Social things several times, which highlighted that course that year. She was really an inspiring teacher. Now, we didn't have language labs, you know, like you have now.
How did you go? How did you practice?
We simply did it in class. We learned from her directly, and there were no tapes, no records, nothing like that to go by.
What? Do you have any memories? Oh. Any memories of things that have happened, like, say, when you were out somewhere and something happened, or when one of the girls got in trouble or something like that? What I'm trying to get at is, like, some little story or some little escapade that someone pulled that makes everything seem like it was really real and really fun and not just the whole routine of going to school.
I don't recall anything as a personal experience. I've heard many tales from others, and we've talked about that too, and the various students that were here when we were, and the funny things they would tell that would happen to them, but they were the girls that dared to do.
Yes, and there was always a certain percentage of them, I'm sure. I was an awfully good girl. I didn't seem to get up my esteem until a little bit later on. So I never got into anything, but I know there were girls who did. Definitely.
Oh, yes.
Okay. I think, as far as I'm concerned, this kind of wraps up what you were doing when you were in school, unless either of you have something that you'd like to contribute that you remember.
I remember the respect that we pretended to show Dr. and Mrs. Romer. And I'm not certain that we felt it, really, which I think is the big difference between students today and students then. I think if you, for instance, we were expected to call Mrs. Romer Mother Romer, and not all of us did it, but some did, and I can't fancy even asking students today to call Evie Spencer Mother Spencer. Those things that I think mark the difference.
Okay, then I'd like to go on now and talk about your involvement in Lindenwood now as an adult. This can be kind of a touchy area, so, you know, if I start getting too close to something, just let me know. But I'm interested, you've told me, both of you, well, I didn't think, Dorothy, did you tell me how you got involved in it? You did, both of you did, in the Alumni Association or in the administrative part of the school. Why? I guess the biggest question I have is why, as I'm graduating this year and I'm kind of interested in helping the school out in something maybe like the manner you're doing when I get older. And I just wondered why you're doing it and what type of rewards you get from it. Want to start out?
Well, As I said, I was in the Alumni Association and president for 4 years of the association. And coincidentally, my son was in the university, and this was during the 60s, and you remember all the riots, and you know, you don't want to get involved too closely with your children in school, and I felt like I was in the right place at the right time to understand students of today, because I was so closely associated here and knew our problems here at Lindenwood, although they were not the same as they were at other schools over the nation. But it gave me an insight into how young people were thinking in the 60s. And I've been very grateful for that. And I just feel that I got so much out of having been here at that time and since. And maybe it's what I get out of it. Not what I do for Lindenwood, but what I receive. Maybe that's it. But I've enjoyed it.
I guess the best reason to keep on going.
Yes.
Dorothy?
I agree with Barbara that I benefit, I'm afraid, more than the school does by my being here. Dr. Brown, Jack Brown, was the one who asked me to come on the board. Barbara has been doing this sort of thing much longer than I. But at the time that I came on the board, my two youngsters were in... I think they had started in college, but there was beginning to be this much talked of generation gap, and I was trying to keep the lines of communication open between my own children and me, and I felt that by having children college age, maybe I could understand them, and by seeing more college students, maybe I could understand my own children better. So it has worked both ways.
Barbara, I think you've kind of touched on this to a certain degree earlier, but as leaving Lindenwood in 1932, I had to take my paper, and coming back in the 60s and seeing the changes in Lindenwood from the time that it was a very strict liberal arts women's college to the time that it's a growing combination of several colleges, including having men on campus. What do you think of the changes? Are they good? Do you think they've helped the school?
Oh, yes.
Do you think they were inevitable?
Very definitely. They were inevitable. We would have not survived had we not made these changes, and I was for the changes all along the way. I will admit that many alumni have been antagonistic about the changes and having men at Lindenwood, but that's not realistic.
Dorothy, do you think maybe from an educational standpoint that the classes have been getting better, though we didn't have the regime or the set schedule, maybe we get the better classes or get the classes we choose? Do you think?
For the most part, I think it's better now. I do think, however, that with as many electives as you have, that there can be a tendency to take some Mickey Mouse courses. And that I'm old-fashioned enough to frown on. But we were told in the board meeting yesterday that the pendulum is swinging back a little more, and that there will not be as many electives. That there's going to be more required work, and I think you could stand a little more of that.
I'm still not even sure when I took my requirements. I'm not sure which courses they were. From the board's viewpoint, it's going to be a sticky question. Maybe we shouldn't go into that.
Well, ask it, and then we'll tell you if we can't answer.
I was just kind of interested in the students. The last 2 years, I guess, have been very, not, I don't want to say belligerent, but have really wanted a voice in what was going on with, say, class changes and things like this. And I was wondering, from the board's viewpoint, how do they see the students who seriously want to be involved with certain functions of the college which really aren't within their power?
Or do you mean such as a student serving on the board of overseers,
no,
possibly? Or
I mean such as a student, or the student government, the people, the students in the government that are saying, we'd like to know what's going on. Like the students, a lot of them have said, well, yeah, here, the board is here, but we don't know, we have no idea what's going on during the meeting or what they're talking about or anything.
Well, is it out of keeping to write the question to the president of the college and say, we have this question about something that we want to do or we think should be done, and we want to present our point of view? Is that out of keeping?
It's not out of keeping. Usually they go and talk to them, and sometimes we get responses and sometimes we don't. I didn't know if the board knew.
Well, all things are not possible,
right,
really.
That's true.
Not only financially, but academically. And a young person can think of many, many things to do because they have brilliant minds, and there are just lots of things they'd like to do, which really are not feasible. But that question should be answered honestly by the administration, that it is not feasible, if that's true, for that particular thing.
Okay, I wanted to find out, I'm not sure I understand the difference between the overseer, the board of overseers, and the board of directors. So, Dorothy, could you kind of explain what exactly the board of directors does? What their purpose is?
Primarily, we have a vote on the board. I believe you don't, isn't that right, Barbara? Well, we won't go into that. I think that is the main distinction. I know that someone sitting next to me yesterday, well, she's a member, a life member, no longer has a vote. I think that is the main distinction. And our terms of office may be different.
Yes, I think that's true. Mm-hmm. And the Board of Overseers was to increase the numbers of people on the board because the charter limited the membership
of the board,
and the Board of Overseers was a way around that.
Mm-hmm. What exactly is your purpose or function? Do you set all administrative policy or some of it, or do you just talk about finances?
The Board of Control sets the, well, I won't say sets the policy, but with the administration. It's like any organization that has an executive board, the executive officers generally make many of the decisions through committee work, mm-hmm. and so forth. And the board is in
Okay, so the board is actually the final or the main control point of the whole school.
Yes, we're always informed. And but we have given the right to the Board of Control to make immediate decisions.
Mm-hmm. They can't always call all of us together, you right. know, and because we come from distant places. But the Board of Control, I believe, is small enough, and most mm-hmm. of them right here in the area, so that if something critical comes up,
it's a more cohesive
they can,
group.
Yes, that's right. They can handle it immediately. And but nothing is done without the board sanction, without board vote.
We're always informed.
Well, I think from my standpoint, that wraps up everything that I wanted to know. Can are there anything left that you want to say about the board or about the school or no? Well, I
it's
thank
been a
you.
Pleasure to be here.
Yes, this was fun.
I've enjoyed it too. Thank you, Mrs. Hamill and Mrs. Warner, for coming down and talking to us today, and I hope I'll see you again soon.
Thank, thank you.
Range free intellectually than I think they were earlier. I suspect the same thing is true of Blended Wood, too.
Yeah, I think I'd agree with that. I have one last question about Lindenwood for you, and I was wondering, we're trying to put together like things like traditions or how student life was or anything. Can you give us any viewpoint from the years that you spent here? What life, you know, traditions, what dorm you lived in? I know that at one point they had bells where the girls had to be at class on bells and at meal on bells and things like that, and I don't think it carried through to your time, but do you have any remembrances of that?
Oh, I think there were bells that rang for class periods. There were certainly lights out at night. If you were going to go away from the campus, you had to even to go downtown in St. Charles during the day. You had to sign out, sign back in again. I think maybe you had to go down in groups for that matter. I don't mean large groups, but at least you didn't go down alone. I think we were supposed to wear hats and gloves, if I remember. I bet most of your students now don't own a hat. Maybe they do now since they're getting a little more popular again. They were very close sort of regulations on how you were dressed appearing on the campus. For instance, if you were wearing a gym suit, you were supposed to be wearing a coat over it to go to the gym from your dormitory by going back to the dormitory rather than walking down, you know, sort of through the main part of the campus. We were wearing, I guess they were black knickers or something like that. At least they came, this is for gym, they came below your knee with an elastic. They weren't the butt variety. White shirt. We're still wearing those lovely cotton tank suits in the swimming pool, which has been quite a small swimming pool.
Did you have any special days in the year or any special celebrations that you always had or that you always made a big to-do over?
I don't remember particularly. There were I think there was an annual tea dance or something, which, as I remember, I avoided like the plague. But I did drag my brother in as escort for one of my friends on one occasion. But I don't remember much about that. Of course, we frequently went into St. Louis for concerts and things of that sort. I remember a very pleasant country road that we used to go hiking. I think there was some marine place whereby you could substitute so far having just the gym class by taking, you know, going for a long walk.
That's neat. Well, that wraps up, I think, everything that I wanted to know. There was one question that we wanted to ask. Dr. Bowman, are you still there?
Yes, I'm still here.
We wanted to get into advice that you could give a young woman going into a career in science, and maybe Dr. Bowman can get more into that since he knows much more about science than I do.
What field are you in, Joni?
I'm in broadcasting. So my science viewpoint, I've taken the basics in botany and zoology. And
did you enjoy them, I hope?
I enjoyed them for the most part. It threw me into Tilsley because I'm not a science type person, and I enjoyed learning about the plants and animals, but there's so much terminology and everything, and I was just going, Dr. Bowman?
You may find it useful.
Do you have any recommendations or advice to give to the young ladies about careers in science?
Well, I wouldn't call them ladies in the first place. I don't know. The word, I suppose the word lady has peculiar connotation because, as you probably know, in the American Chemical Society for years, you had women and you had ladies. If you were a chemist, you were a woman. If you were a spouse, you were a lady.
I didn't realize that.
Oh, yes. There's a good deal of joking on this. In the matter of fact, the national meetings used to have ladies' programs. Now they have general energy programs, which they've incidentally discovered that many men enjoy this as well as women, in the sense of, you know, tours to art galleries and things like that. I would say that there's no reason that I think I would give different advice to a young woman now than I would to a young man in reference to professional considerations. In either case, if you're serious about a profession, you've got to plan to make a considerable investment. Seeing that you become competent in that area and that you stay competent in that area throughout your life. If you're going to get involved in a profession, then you're making a commitment to something that is more than being able to perform at a minimum level in order to draw a salary check.
Dr. Harrison, you said when we were talking about you being the first woman and women in the Chemical Society, and also just now, it seems like to me that you're depending more on professional standards and educational standards than on the fact that you're a woman, and I happen to agree with you on that also. I think that there's no reason really for the discrimination or for people feeling that, you know, because I'm a woman, I'm entitled or I'm not entitled. But do you find with new people going into chemistry, I know it's a lot different than, say, from broadcasting, do you find that people, like that women have to prove themselves a little bit harder or that women have to work a little bit harder?
That's the line that I would stay off of, because I think it's self-defeating. And in a sense, I think you're looking for a reason to rationalize not succeeding. Because if you know, there are a lot of women that like to make the statement, I shouldn't say that a lot, there used to be perhaps more, that you had to be twice as good as a man. Well, that's a bit of arrogance as far as I'm concerned, because you're automatically saying, and if you do succeed, look, I'm twice as good as the men I'm working with. Otherwise, I wouldn't succeed. If you don't succeed, then you're building yourself an escape hatch. Well, of course, you know, the part of the deck is stacked against me, and therefore, there's no reason I should feel any sense of responsibility for not having performed. My theory, I think, has always been, and it certainly still is, what I would call a concept of a positive presence. There's I'm tremendously impressed with the contribution that someone can make just by the physical fact of being present. I think this is true in discussions that have to do with women in or out of something. I think it has to do with any of the minorities. If there is a woman present, I think the discussion is different than if the woman is not present. As a member of a minority group is present, I think the discussion in reference to minorities, etc., is different than if a representative of the minorities was not present. My effort has been to, I think, or at least I hope it has always been, to be a positive presence. And make what kind, and by that I simply mean that you, if provided the opportunity, you're there. And you make an effort to contribute in a positive fashion. The situation that I find myself in now is that I am, in recent years, had opportunities for which to perform, but for which I had not had the opportunity to get the normal experience you'd expect to have preceding that. And again, I think what you have to do is just simply to go ahead and not worry about whether you're going to be good or whether you're not going to be good. You just simply do what you can and trust for the best. One of the things I would certainly say to young women is, if offered the opportunity to do something that involves responsibility, don't hesitate to go ahead. I think there's a tendency, perhaps, in women to want to be reassured that they're capable of meeting that responsibility. And I think for years, one of the things that employers, industries, for heaven's sake, drum into the heads of your students, that if they're, an employer is not going to offer them adequate responsibility, if they don't think they can fulfill it. And don't waste your energy worrying about that, just get with it. Men don't always succeed either.
Right. Dr. Harrison, I thank you. Dr. Borman, do you have anything to add or anything else?
No, I think I've had all my questions taken care of.
I hope I get to meet the two of you sometime, either individually or collectively.
I would like that very much.
That would be really great. Dr. Harrison, I've enjoyed it. I agree with a lot of your views, and I'm very impressed.
Well, I don't know if that's the right attitude, but anyway, nice to talk with you.
Well, I'm impressed with your attitudes toward getting a job and things like that, let's say. I'm going into my senior year, and you put a lot of things that I've been thinking more or less intact.
Let me say one thing to you about getting a job. But I think sometimes when you go out to look for a job, many people don't recognize, even men and women. That is, looking for a job is demeaning. It's the first time you've had to go out and sell yourself, and any time you have to sell yourself, there's an aspect that is, this can be exciting. It can be a very exciting experience, but there's also an element in it that is demeaning. I think women perhaps have been made more sensitive to this. The first time I picked this up was an autobiography of an actress, and I'm sorry I do not remember who it was, but the hope of this eternally being one of the problems of that profession is that you eternally have to sell yourself, and to have to sell yourself is the need.
Well, thank you, Dr. Harrison. I appreciate your time and your...
It's been fun talking to you.
It's been fun talking to you. I hope that we do get to meet, and maybe sometime you can make it out here, or maybe we'll be up there and we can drop in or
You'll
something.
You'll be around another year, got it?
No, I'm going to be leaving at the end of this year, but I hope to come back often.
Okay, fine.
Thank you, Dr. Harrison.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.